Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. Today's episode of the Monday Rundown is brought to you by our friends at Heartland Flags and heartlandflags.com. NCAA tournament season is upon us. Maybe you want to pick up a flag for your favorite Cinderella possibility. Maybe it's South Dakota State Jackrabbits. Maybe it's the Nevada Wolfpack.
Maybe it's the Ramblers.
It could be the Ramblers of Loyola Chicago making their first NCAA tournament appearance in 33 years. Who knows? But I can almost guarantee you, I'm not going to – don't quote me on the Loyola Ramblers flag, but I bet you could find most any other flag when it comes to the NCAA tournament and the teams within it at Heartland Flags and heartlandflags.com. You think they make Loyola Chicago flags?
You know, I would not be surprised. Like I said, their inventory is so extensive and attractive. They got a lot of clientele, obviously, that they've got a service.
And if I had to trust anyone to find me a Loyola Ramblers flag, yeah, it would be the guys at Heartland Flags.
Absolutely.
What's up, man? It feels like it's been a while since I was on a podcast. This has only been 5 days.
Well, you're used to them being almost daily, right?
Yeah.
And now basketball season over for both the men and the women. Got wrestling I guess to look forward to.
Yeah, is that this weekend? The tournament in Cleveland?
That's a good question.
Man, if only we had our wrestling reporter here.
Exactly.
That would be nice.
It's a shame Iowa State didn't get more people qualified, but this, again, is that first step, reestablishing that foundation and from which to build, and I think that's going to rapidly occur.
Certainly. We have plenty of stuff to talk about today. Obviously, a lot of big football news coming out on Friday with the staff and some additions, or well, not really additions, but some changes made by Matt Campbell with that offensive group in the Bergstrom building. And then, of course, the release of the NCAA tournament bracket last night in one of the biggest farces of television I've ever seen in my entire life on TBS. But first, we'll start with the football. Iowa State hires promotes Joel Gordon to quarterbacks coach, replacing Jim Hoffer, who moves into an analyst role. Jeff Myers officially promoted to the position as offensive line coach, something that we had been anticipating here over the last several weeks. And then Joe Houston made the special teams coordinator. And like I told you on Friday, I believe he is probably the only Division I high major position coach to have appeared in an episode of Modern Family.
Yeah, that's outstanding. That's great. Great trivia.
Yeah.
Great trivia. How about let's start with football and then we can come back to the farce.
Yeah.
I know a lot of theories going around, you know, is there, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing, but this is a part of Campbell's culture. He wants a bunch of different voices, and I went around asking a bunch of guys about that because that's something that's been floated ever since the beginning. I remember talking to guys like Manning and just about how, you know, there are no bad ideas.
Yeah.
He doesn't want anybody to think it's a bad idea. Sometimes they throw stuff out there and it gets shot down three ways. But because it was out there, it might uncover another idea beneath it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to my man, that's what those guys said. You know, even as GAs, who was it? I think Myers said, we didn't even think of ourselves as a G. I was a young coach.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the terminology, the jargon around the team. And that's the type of setting in which creativity evolves, right? And I think we've seen the offense evolved to some degree, and I think we'll see it more. And I think the fact that all these voices are there, they've all got that shared vision, right? I mean, all the buzzwords that are part of, you know, Campbell's culture and I don't know. I think it can work well for them. And I like the idea of Jim Hoffer being kind of an alchemist, a mad scientist, if you will, kind of overseeing everything, as Coach Campbell alluded to that day.
They have to have one of the youngest staffs in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, especially offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Gordon is – I mean, he's not as young as some of the other ones, but he was still playing college football in the early 2000s.
Yep, yep.
And then Nate Shieldhouse was playing college football like 5 years ago, is probably one of the youngest running back coaches, if not just in Power Five, but in all of Division I college football. Joe Houston's a young guy. Yep. Jeff Myers finished his career at Toledo, I think, in 2014.
Yeah.
So Brian Gasser is by no means a grizzled vet, and you could probably say the same thing about Alex Golish. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy to look at this thing, and then not even just that, but think about Jake Waters, who was on the staff last year. He just went and got a job at UT San Antonio as a full-time position coach. Mm-hmm. So they got a pipeline going here with these young coaches of becoming, full-time position coaches. I almost wanted to ask Campbell on Friday, so what's the plan for – obviously, Gordon's role was filled by Jim Hoffer, but what's the plan to fill some of these other roles that are left open? What's mm-hmm. what's the plan to fill Jeff Myers' spot or Joe Houston's quality control spot that would be open now?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would hazard a guess that you've talked about the youthfulness of it all. This would be the youngest time major staff, no question. If John Haycock wasn't spoiling the average, but I also put together the best defense we've seen in many, many years at Iowa State, which is seasoned vet status in that way. I mean, he is a remarkably good coach, right?
Yeah.
And remember on the recruiting party, Chris said, those availabilities when he watches them, it's like, we learn something every time with Coach Haycock. He does have a knack to really be able to explain things in a straightforward way, and he's completely no-nonsense.
Well, and he's one of those guys that he explains things in a no-nonsense way, but until you go back and watch it again, you kind of think that he didn't really say anything.
Yeah.
And then you listen to it, and it's like, and he's actually really insightful right there, and like in the moment you're listening to him and he doesn't really seem like he wants to be there.
Yeah.
But then he does like give good, thoughtful answers that have answers. The answer actually has answers. We get a lot of answers that don't have any answers in them.
Yeah. Sometimes at first blush, those seem, it kind of depends on the delivery, right?
Yeah.
Some people are really, I don't want to say flamboyant, demonstrative in their delivery. They got a sort of,
well, it's like Mark Mangino always seemed like he was saying something, but yeah. He was never actually saying
always
anything.
Saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of, I think, we got a lot of work to do, but we're going to get there.
They didn't get there.
No, nope, they didn't.
Narrator voice. They did not get there.
The fat lady indeed did sing.
Man, we went off the rails with that one, but
yeah. But I think the deal here, and I think it's, I understand the caution from some fans where it's like, boy, I want these defined rules. I want this slot here, this slot here, this slot here. How it can be disconcerting when Campbell says something like, I don't even know if we'll name an offensive coordinator. I think for salary purposes, you kind of have to,
yeah.
I do that, but he's making the more general point that, we know how much he's been involved as an offensive guy in the play calling. I think we learned even more about that at that kind of surprise Friday availability. He's an offensive-minded defensive player, but, clearly a student of the game in all aspects.
Here we go. Matt Campbell pulls a power move, says, screw promoting someone to offensive coordinator. I'm the offensive coordinator, and I'm giving myself a raise.
There you go. Why not? Why not? He's built up a lot of trust for good reason.
Yeah.
In his decision making and quote unquote breakthrough season that looks to be gathering steam for more bigger breakthroughs to come.
Right, but I think that this group of guys. This is what makes it different to me about than the Rhodes era. Even though these guys are, young, Nate Shieldhouse was standing. He's really the only one who has been an outsider that came in.
Yep. But he had a relationship with Golish.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You look at what Rhodes was doing when he would put these staffs together. I mean, yeah, I know he promoted Messingham, but a lot of those guys had never worked together before mm-hmm. Paul brought them together.
Yeah.
And then every single year there, somebody new is coming in to fill those roles. And on defense, it's like Stan Egan came in and mm-hmm. To coach defensive ends. And the revolving door of defensive backs coaches there for a while. Mangino bringing in all his different people when he was doing stuff. And then you have Klonakis and Brandon Blaney. And I mean, it was just, he was just like, had puzzle pieces that didn't really fit together,
yeah.
but he's just trying to make them fit together.
Yeah.
And I feel like Campbell is taking, he'll lose a puzzle piece, but then he'll just get one that's shaped the same way and put it right back in.
Or he'll completely decide to remake the puzzle.
Yeah.
Here's what we thought the puzzle was going to look like. Here's what it's going to look like now, and it's going to be better.
Yeah.
And yeah, very different in terms of philosophies, but I mean, I get why that happened with Rhodes. You know, just think how those were bad years down the stretch. No mm-hmm. question. Two wins, three wins. And, you know, every close game seemingly lost, notwithstanding that Iowa game, the EJ Bibbs touchdown where Sam Richardson yeah. exclaimed that he about crapped his pants when he threw that ball low to him and all that. I mean, and the Cole Netton kick to win it. But I mean, there was, I hate to say it, but there had to have been a degree of desperation. And, you know, then there's appearances, right? What does this PR look like? You know, you get burned when Messingham's promoted from within. Well, do you want a splash hire? Is somebody in your ear telling you about a splash hire? And that's what Mark Mangino
They went, from two ends of the spectrum. Messingham was, the ultimate safe hire, and it didn't work. And then Mangino was, the ultimate splash hire, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
When they probably should have tried to go somewhere in the middle, if they could have,
And you know, that's hindsight being 20/20. And I'm not going to, I mean, Paul Rhodes did those things and in part started to be a PR manager because of, you know, if Ronnie Cohen, David Irving stay intact, that defense is going to be a whole lot better in one of those years. And
Colin Bevins, who went on to be the National Defensive Player of the Year at Division II.
Yeah, Northwest Missouri. You know, they had a lot of pieces. They were a lot closer than it seems like.
Yeah.
So it actually, even though they missed on a lot of recruits, we know it's well documented some how much of a certain class remained and all that. Rhodes became PR manager, I think, and this is just my thoughts on it because I think we all enjoyed covering him and think as a human he's a great guy.
Yeah.
He was backed into a corner, so you have to make these moves, and you're starting to become just like a PR player, even more so than how you're putting together the team. Whereas Campbell has this freewheeling thing established, where guys fill roles, guys speak up when they're GAs or young coaches, quote unquote, and their opinion is valued just as much as other guys. You know, if it's a good idea, they go with it. If it's not, they shoot it down. But maybe somebody spins it and thinks, I see where you're going with that, and what about X?
Yeah.
You know, so very interesting contrast there, and again, like I said, I can understand people wanting more solidly, chiseled out roles, but I think this has worked for Campbell for a long time, and we've seen it work both seasons, even though the first season didn't bring the wins.
Well, and the thing, you know, the culture has been such a thing that they've talked about so much. When you're promoting from within, or you're promoting guys who have been with you for a long time, or in the case of Nate Shieldhouse, is a young guy who has been, you know, has a connection to other people on the staff, you're maintaining that culture. Like, you're doing the continuity of that is doing something to carry that culture over, even though some people might be leaving or something like that. Whereas with the road staff, when you're just, it's a revolving door for some of your position coaches, and every other day it's like you've got a new guy that's stepping into that room. It's hard to keep that culture carried over, and that was one of their big problems in those last couple of years, is that they could never build a culture that was, you know, that could drive sustainable winning. And when you can't do that and you don't have the voices in there that are driving to create this culture, then that's how you get rolling, the ball gets rolling downhill so fast, and you have no chance to stop it.
Yeah.
Which is basically what happened to them in, what was that, 2013, the Klonakis season and in Messingham.
Yep.
With the pistol.
Yeah. I came up with the pistol. Klonakis, the innovator.
Yeah.
But this approach is a truly farm league type approach.
Yeah.
Young, hungry guys, many of them that didn't play the game that long ago, still with the type of knowledge that you want, you vet, and especially if you know them, you know what kind of knowledge they bring and creativity, character, all that stuff. And you put them in a position to build up. And then right. if you lose guys, you're losing them because they're going to take that next step, or they want to go home here, or they want to go, you know, that kind of stuff. And then you've been grooming, like Jeff Myers, younger guys within your GA system. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an approach that makes sense, you know, because the splash hire doesn't matter if the splash happens and then it's still – Yeah. You know, after that, once you get these ripple effects with young, hungry guys, I think that can relate then to the players more, because I think we learned when Mangino was that weird day that he was finally just not on the same page, so fired, that guys didn't take to him. And they didn't see him as being invested in yeah. really. I'm being a little bit.
You're trying to be diplomatic.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean that has an effect, you know. And this is the exactly opposite approach. And they're also not put in a position, you know, when Manning, and again, it's the opportunity to go coach the tight ends for the Colts, but February.
Yeah,
I mean that's unique timing and bad timing from their sense. So. They pieced it together the best they can, and they certainly deserve the benefit of the doubt. And I think it looks like a good group, you know, with that young, hungry, status going into it.
That will forever be one of the most infamous press conferences in Iowa State history.
Yeah, we're hanging out. It's like, okay.
It's another Monday. They've lost however many games in a row, and Paul Rhodes walks in and says, I've decided to make a change at offensive coordinator. Everybody's like,
well, what?
Yeah, it's, oh, we got to work today.
We've got some different tweets to put out here instead of the reason the Cyclones struggle on offense again is why, you know?
Yeah.
That was a wild day. And imagine how, he looked like he was sick to his stomach.
Yeah.
Having to deliver that.
It was him having to admit that he was wrong. You know,
to bring him in.
All right, we'll talk about the NCAA tournament a little bit and the end of the Iowa State basketball season when we come back here on the Monday Rundown presented by Heartland Flags.
Hey guys, we'll get you back to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast here in a few minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about a story. I was hanging out with Dr. Michael Kruger from Ames Eye Clinic and Des Moines Eye Care a couple weeks ago. We had lunch, and I told Dr. Kruger, hey man, I hadn't been to the eye doctor since I was like a kid. And I thought back to it. I mean, it's been like at least 25 years since I've gone to the eye doctor because my eyes seem fine. Like I can see. It's not like, you know, I walk around squinting all the time, but I have headaches a lot. You know, I stare at a screen like 12 hours a day. That can't be good for me. So here's what we're going to do. Coming up in March, later on this month, I'm going to go get my eyes checked. And I'm going to show you guys why it's important to do, how easy it is, and also that you got a cool Cyclone fan and Dr. Kruger who you can go and hang out with. Nothing scary about it. They accept many medical and vision insurance plans at the Ames Eye Clinic in Des Moines Eye Care. Got those two convenient locations, DesMoinesEyeCare.com, AmesEyeClinic.com, same week appointments. I'll let you guys know how it goes. I could be in glasses the next time you see me. It'll be worth it, though. Go give them a shot. Ames Eye Clinic, Des Moines Eye Care, Dr. Kruger. Now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to the Monday Rundown here presented by Heartland Flags at CycloneFanatic.com. The NCAA tournament bracket has been unveiled. Obviously, everybody knows at this point Iowa State is not in the field. Shut up, Siri.
Siri wants to be interviewed.
Yeah, she wants to get my thoughts on the tournament, I think. I will say, too, anybody out there looking to test their knowledge against – if you want to test your knowledge against Rob Gray of college basketball, then get signed up for the Cyclone Fanatic Bracket Challenge on the front page of the website right now. It's also stickied to the top of the men's basketball forum presented by our friends at Wild Rose Casino. The winners, I was thinking we'll probably do top three, will be receiving prizes courtesy of Wild Rose Casino. So get signed up for that, the Cyclone Fanatic Bracket Challenge. Like I said, you can find it at the – I don't think it's at the top. I think it's on the in the third slot on the homepage right now as we are recording this. But then you can find it sticking to the top of the men's basketball forum as well on the website. First of all, I want to talk about this selection show. Did you watch it?
I watched some of it. I knew that, you know, there's you know, without Iowa State being involved, it's the first time that I haven't been working around it too. So I just kind of did some stuff with the fam. And then I saw, I followed it more on Twitter a little bit because I just wanted to see what was in the field. And then I saw that, as you said, farce. I mean, how ridiculous. If we're going to release the teams alphabetically quickly, and then we're going to do the matchups later.
I will say
seeding.
That when they were putting in the the automatic bids, they're announcing all those. I was like, come on.
Yeah.
Like all you had to do was put one graphic on the screen and we'd be good. You know, you could talk about it for 2 minutes. Everybody already knows who the automatic bids are and nobody cares to see them all listed out or anything like that. I actually did kind of liked it when they did the at-large thing,
really?
Though. I think that it built some suspense to it. Because when you know that it's in alphabetical order, you're much more aware of, like, oh, crap. Like, this team didn't
make
it.
We're not in there.
You know? And it also, it builds some anticipation because as your team, you're getting closer to the point where your team would be. And it's like, you know, think, for instance, you're in the M's and they're talking about Miami and such and such, and then Notre Dame doesn't pop up, and then it's like, damn, Notre Dame got left out. And it's like stuff like that where you know when your team should be coming up, so when your team's like, if your team is there, it's complete joy, and if they're not there, then it's complete sadness. You know, and you don't even have to wait for the bracket.
I don't see any reason to tinker with the way that it always was, though, because there is always that suspense. It lingers then.
Yeah.
You know, but once that's done, once you know your team's out, it's like, F this.
Yeah.
You know, what reason do I have to watch to see the – I mean, I get that they tried to add a new wrinkle, but it seems odd to do it in such a way that so quickly you know, destroys that intense, that suspense that frequently is threaded through the entire broadcast that sometimes they, again, prolong too much.
Yeah.
I think people are going to complain. It was just, I'm kind of with people and I'm not always this way, but why change something? Why not try to do it in such a way that people always enjoy it? Because you know you're going to get a segment that is going to be mad if you change anything. And I
mean, how many shows like that in sports are basically universally loved, you know, or things like that in sports that way it was before, there was nothing wrong with it, you know. They announce the bracket and it's like, and every year it's the same thing, and you don't want it to be anything other than what it's always been. You know, nobody is asking for them to change the selection show. It's not like college football where they don't want them to do shows every single week where they're talking about the rankings and all this stuff. People don't care about that. With the selection show, it's one time a year, you do it the same way every single time, the same formula has always worked, and you're going to get the same ratings regardless of what kind of new wrinkle you try and put in there. And if you just announce the bracket, then everybody's gonna be happy. And the way that they did it yesterday left people way more unhappy than what they probably ever have with any selection show. Even the one that took 2 hours for them to put the whole bracket out before it finally got leaked. Like it doesn't make sense. And that's why I tweeted, I can't believe that somebody out there thought this was a good idea. It's like, everybody loves this, so let's try and change the thing that everybody loves for absolutely no reason.
That's my thought. I some people, you know, kill the fact that it's, you know, some NBA guys too, because you got Ernie, you've got.
See, I like it.
I love Barkley's question to the chair of the Creighton AD about Oklahoma. First declaration, then question. That was fantastic. I love his unfiltered way. And, you know, Kenny's good. Those guys have done their homework. The first year that they started doing those guys more, you could tell Charles wasn't putting much time into it, right? He was just going to be the personality, the bombastic guy that, you know, that has created a brand for himself and an entertaining brand. But
I mean, you can still tell that he doesn't really know, like when they talk about smaller teams. But when they're talking about the main schools, you know that he knows what's going on.
Yeah, he's paying attention. And he makes no bones about the small ones. He's like, I didn't pay attention.
I have no idea. Yeah.
But I thought the commentary and all that was fine. But, yeah, radically changed something that, as you said, is a known quantity. It's going to mostly make people happy. They're going to tune in. You know what you're going to get. Now, that being said, people are going to tune in regardless. Anybody who's really mad about the way the format was yesterday, they're not going to boycott the selection show next year because they'll be interested. But I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Like when they change who's going to sing One Shining Moment, and I know that's a dated song and all that, but
there's only one man who should sing One Shining Moment.
Luther Vandross, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone who says different is a communist.
I'll go with fascist, but either way, we've got a couple of the worst ists covered. Ooh, just got a cameo appearance outside the palatial offices here.
Yeah, Chris Williams with his now nationally renowned suck it chop through the glass windows here at the Cyclone Fanatic offices.
Yep. Trying to knock us off our
Did you see that on game here. You see it on TV, Chris, when you did that?
When did he do it?
During the South Dakota State game.
Oh, I saw the photos being posted of him by himself there in the nice section there behind the bench and all that. But somehow I missed that. How did I miss it?
They had a big three at the end of the championship game. And I was enjoying some pops with Travis Hines and Tommy Birch. And
were you good sons?
No, we were in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I was at a different location from them, and they got there, and they said – the place I was at had no TVs. It was the first place I'd been in a long time that didn't have a TV. It was completely dark. It was kind of weird. Ooh. But they came in. They're like, dude, did you see what C-Dub did? Made a video of him just like this after the three went in.
That's outstanding.
So I texted him. I was like, respect for the suck it chop on national television. Yep. But that's completely beside the point. But I think... Yeah, I mean, the bracket show, it just felt like it was disjointed. I don't know that they really had a plan.
The live studio audience.
Well, it's like me and Jeff Woody when we do CFTV Live sometimes, where we have our plan, and then all of a sudden we're like off doing something different, you know? And they brought that whiteboard out there for Charles and Kenny to pick out their bracket. They went through, I think, two regions, and then they're like, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore. And then they just like went and did something else.
We're going to go over here and do this. And
yeah.
I think you see the kind of naked marketing ploys that happen too.
Like, yeah, well, the Pizza Hut.
Yeah, it walks over there. You know, that's why those people are there, right? Give them some Pizza Hut pizza and say, hey, talk about how good it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Jeez.
As long as they don't eat the stuffed crust backwards.
We've got to get the games up there. We've got to get our brackets up. I still contend that I think K-State might have upset the Jayhawks if Dean Wade would have been able to play in the Big 12 tourney.
I was really close to getting my prediction right.
You were very close, yes, as I acknowledged and gave you full credit for. I don't think I was that far off either, though. I mean,
no, you weren't.
Tech was right there.
It was a good tournament. All right, real quick, have you gotten a chance to look at the bracket much then?
I haven't done a whole lot. I will get in and add mine to the challenge. You'll beat me. There's no question about that. Most Fanatics probably will as well.
Who's somebody you've got your eye on going into the first couple of days? Was maybe a matchup that tickles your fancy?
Oh, there are a number of them that look pretty good. But the one that really has me vexed, I would say, is Florida State.
Yeah.
It's K-State, right?
No, it's Florida State is sorry, I'm looking at the bracket. Where you at, Florida State? Oh, they're with Missouri.
Oh, that's right. Yep. I mean, you've got the whole Porter situation.
Yeah.
Florida State's so up and down in this, even when they're having great years, this is an okay year for them.
Yeah.
excuse me.
I'll give you one.
I can't figure out who's going to pull that out. Although I'm leaning Florida State.
I think I picked Missouri, but I'll give you one. Creighton, Kansas State.
Oh, yeah.
The Marcus Foster pod.
Yep, Marcus Foster, Greg McDermott. I mean, a couple great shooters there and scorers there for the Blue Jays. And I've liked K-State all year, though.
All we need is Oregon to complete the Dana Altman.
Yeah, there you go.
The Dana Altman pod.
I picked K-State in this one.
I think I picked Creighton. And then actually in that same region, the potential for a Kentucky-Arizona round of 32 game is very intriguing, followed by an Arizona and Virginia Sweet 16 game.
Yep.
Arizona's playing about as well as anybody in the country right now, and DeAndre Ayton has just been unstoppable.
Yeah, and so, even though Kentucky was on a roll, won the SEC tournament again. I wonder if they try to coerce people into calling it the SEC championship, like the Big 12.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, good on them.
They played it in St. Louis.
That's right. That's right. But a lot of matchups. I think at first blush, when I just kind of went through a bracket last night, I had three number ones in the Final Four.
I did as well.
I mean, I did. I couldn't. I kept saying, who do I replace? I mean, odds are these guys are going to get past them. And if I was going to replace them, it would be a number two.
I put my first initial Final Four was Virginia, Villanova, Duke, and North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had Duke and Virginia in the final.
Yeah, yeah. An all ACC final.
I was going to say, the more I looked at it, too, I was like, I don't know that this is, you know, this. I'm weary of putting three ACC teams into the Final Four, but I feel confident about this still. Like, I feel like this is a pretty good pick. I picked Duke to win it all.
Okay.
I like Duke, man. I'm not sure that anybody can stop their two big guys in the winner take all type game.
Yeah, I hear you. Once I got down to it, I like Villanova strictly, I think, for consistency's sake. Just such a good, well-rounded team. I picked Villanova in the bracket I'm doing with some friends and family, but so many things can upend this stuff, though, because there are a lot of teams that are in that. Let's see. There are a lot of teams that are, say, 11. I mean, I look at how good San Diego State's been playing lately.
Yeah.
As an 11 seed, I'd be wary of them.
Loyola Chicago is an interesting
very
team.
Very dangerous.
Because they play a kind of an odd style where they have the floor really spaced and stuff.
Yeah.
Clayton Custer. You're gonna
player of the year.
Yeah, he's gonna declare his presence with authority.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for some reason, it was escaping me who they would be playing. But whoever emerges from that St. Bonaventure UCLA play-in game.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if they beat Florida.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Gators. But the Gators sometimes make a run when they're not a two or three seed, which seems like they always are.
Right.
They're a six. Boy, you can go and so many ways. You can go right and go wrong at this, and that's part of the fun of it.
And to close, I will say, the idea of a Duke-Kansas regional final,
yes,
in Omaha, Nebraska, is very, very enticing to me.
Yeah,
that sounds like something that that I might have to work my way into.
Yeah, yeah. That would be pretty, pretty, pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, Larry David.
Pretty, pretty, pretty good.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Rob Gray, for coming in to talk about football in the NCAA tournament.
Thank you, Jared.
And sign up for the CF Bracket Challenge. See if you can beat Rob. He thinks you can. Yeah, and me. You're not going to beat me.
Yeah.
And vote for me in the Matt Campbell bracket. Apparently.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The Iowa Cubs are the worst.
I'm a Cubs fan, though. This is a tough, tough decision.
Yeah, but this is the Iowa Cubs, not the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, but a lot of
they already all
players
went
have come through.
They already all went through.
Deal rebuilt that entire farm system. They got tons of great folks coming through, many of them coming through AA right now, though. So I'll think long and hard about that one.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will talk to you guys again soon.